When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And this is episode 498, Top 100 Games of All Time, number 31 to number 21. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. All right, friends, we are getting down to the last days of our Top 100s. Of course, this week is number 30 to number 21. Anthony, we're closing in.
We're getting there. 498. You said episode 498, and I was like, it made me feel weird. I'm like, that's really close. That's really close to 500.
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, we're recording that episode in a very stressful week, by the way.
Like, oh, no.
You know, when this episode launches, it's like the day after the election, so... Not to get political, but it's a stressful week for everybody. Episode 500.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's happening. That's how it rolls. That's what we're doing.
That should be an interesting episode. Thank you for that. Thanks.
Yeah. I just wanted to put that in your head, so there's no stress. No.
Oof. All right.
I had that thought this morning. But no, it's amazing. It's 500 episodes crazy, and 498 is almost crazy. So we're getting down to it. Like, when we get to top 20, these are just like legit all timers. So
should we even do this list? I mean, come on. 30 to 21. Does anyone ever talk about the 30s to 21s?
I mean, we're about to.
Oh. All right.
Yeah. So there you go.
I guess. We have to do something for the episode.
Yeah. These are good games, man. I don't know about yours, but mine are good.
But we could talk politics instead.
No.
You brought it up.
No.
Come on.
Doom scrolling, but in my head. I don't like it.
Board games?
Yeah, board games.
All right. So this week we'll do board games. We'll do something a little different.
Board games are never political, ever. That's so it's fine.
It's very true.
Yeah.
It's apolitical, non-political.
Yeah. None of the games we're going to talk about today are political in any way. It's all good.
I have one that's kind
of not true. No, there's a few.
There's a thing in there. Yeah, thing.
You've got at least two, maybe three. I got four.
I can work a couple more into it. Yeah, there's a thing. All right, so my list, my vibe this week is political.
Yeah apparently.
Apparently, it's political. there's. I mean, ironically, it kind of is.
Yeah.
It's groups versus groups.
Yeah, you have some solidly political tribes in there.
Tribes versus tribes, man.
Yeah.
Political actions happening, you know, all that politicking.
I was going to say my vibe this week is like individual countries.
Uh-huh.
But I think because of that, it's also just politics.
It's just politics. It's just a quicker way to say it's just politics.
Yeah. Like, I'd say like it's 50-50 on that front. So I think we're both in the same boat this week.
How'd that happen?
I don't know.
Jeez.
It's Freudian.
I guess. Huh. All right.
Yeah.
We'll see where it goes.
We're going to have fun because this is not traumatic at all to talk politics right now.
It's all good. It's fine. It's fine. Right? Just like that meme. It's fine.
Yeah, nothing's on fire.
Sure. All right. Well, speaking of fire, these games, they're on fire.
Oh, love it.
Say transition.
You did it.
Number 30 to number 21, Anthony. Let's burn up the list. But before we do, before it gets super hot in here, we want to let people know what BGA's doing, because that also is pretty hot, man. It's pretty hot.
It is. Yeah.
Tell people the things.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been focused on episode 500 for the last
500 episodes.
Yeah. And specifically for the last 9 weeks. So, yes. What we want to talk about real quick is episode 501. Because
there's an episode 501.
Apparently we're going to keep going. I don't know.
It's like an after credits episode.
That would be funny if we're just like episode 500. We're like, and we're done.
And out.
The end. Fade to black.
We'll do a Sopranos. We'll just like just static for.
Yeah. Like don't even put the music at the end. Just like soft cut. No new episode.
Jeez. There is an episode in BGA's history where there is. We sing a song after an episode, after the music.
Oh, yeah. We used to do that. We used to like the post credits.
Yeah, we did a post. We sang a song. I know exactly what episode it is. No one knows it because it's way back.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Our friend Dave might know. He's going back to his old episodes.
Hey, Dave. It's 2024. By the time you listen to it, it's probably, what, 2030? I don't know.
Yeah. Someday you'll get to this and you're like, I know that one.
Yeah, we have back episodes. Not just one episode this week, there's other episodes too.
497. If you're like listening to this, you're like, this is fun. Like, guess what? You can listen to this for the next 4 years.
And there's other podcasts too, surprisingly enough.
Yeah. This is not even the only one. Mm-hmm. So 501, we're going to do another top 100 list, but this time we're going to do the listeners' top 100 list.
Ooh, that's even better than ours. I feel bad now.
almost certainly. Yes. So in the past, we've done listeners' top 20s.
We have.
Top 10s.
Yeah.
We've never gone beyond 20.
Ooh.
So this is a big one, right? We want everybody to submit their top 10 games because we need data, but also we want your voice to be heard. So please check the show notes, check the website, check the Facebook page. There'll be a link with a poll where you can submit your top 10 games of all time. I am going to take all those games in about 2 weeks and I'm going to aggregate them together into a top 100 list. So we need everybody to submit their top 10 games. This is a contest because obviously we have to incentivize this. Like, you know, if you're going to take the time to fill out the list, we got to give somebody something.
Mm-hmm.
So if you win the contest, you will get to choose one of the games from that top 100 list that is in print and available, and we will ship it out to you.
Very nice.
That's a huge list to choose from.
I can't wait to apply.
Yeah. Not you, man. Not
aww.
You. I know. You're not eligible. You're
I listen show. Every week.
Do you?
I mean, I'm listening now.
Yeah, well, that's true. I listen live.
One
of two people who listens live.
I have the super, super, super duper backer background podcast listener.
Yeah.
Level. On Patreon.
We're at the co-founder level. We're good.
Right.
We own the company.
That's right.
So yeah, definitely check that out. It'll take you 5 minutes. It's always fun to put together a top 10 list and you're entered into a contest to potentially win one of these games and you help us out with our episode 501. So
very nice.
We're going to run this contest until, let's see, when we're recording that. It's going to be November 5th. So you have about 2 weeks and change or so from when you hear this episode to complete that. And the link will be everywhere. So if you can't find it, just click a thing. It'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you in advance for filling that out.
I like that. Their list is going to be better than ours. I'm kind of worried.
It always is.
Well, that's going to be a lot of fun. I like that a lot. And what else?
Well, we are going to be at PAX Unplugged December 6th, 7th, and 8th.
We'll be
there the whole time. Both of us and a bunch of other people that we know as well.
Excellent.
And we are going to be presenting two panels while we are there. So we are very excited for this. We've wanted to present at PAX for years, and we got the opportunity this year, and we are happy to jump on board. And we get two panels, so on Saturday and Sunday.
We are crushing it.
So crushing it. So Saturday, we are presenting at 2:30 in the Crab God Theater It'll be myself, Anthony, Chris, and Will Nation, who's been on the show several times. We're going to be talking about how to teach board games in the context of how we teach board games, but also in the context of how you might use them professionally, educationally, whatever format you might use. So it's a great panel that we've put together in the past, and we're really excited to share this one. And then on Sunday, we're going to be talking about inclusion in board games, and we will be joined by several guests from different organizations that we've worked with throughout board gaming. So we'll have representatives from Guardians Mental Health and Nomnivore Games, VGC USA, Board Games for the Better. It'll be a huge panel. Super excited about that one. That's at 2:30 on Sunday, also in the Crab God Theater. So if you are at PAX, please stop by, join the, you know, watch the panel, ask some questions, hang out, stop by for a few minutes, say hi, wave from the back, whatever you want to do. And, you know, ping us as well. Like, we'll be there the whole weekend. We'll be there from Thursday evening through Sunday evening. So we're looking forward to seeing everybody.
Excellent. Yeah, I think it's there are two very good panels, because I think the most important thing that comes that's around tabletop gaming that's usually not talked about in tabletop gaming is typically someone, of course, is going to have a game and somebody is going to have to teach that.
Yes.
And knowing how to teach a game is a much more involved, complex, delicate, dynamic process than most people think about. And your game night can live and die based on that teach. Mm-hmm. Did everyone catch it? Did they understand? Did you provide the rules? You know, and I think this is a really good opportunity to learn how to do that after we've taught endless numbers of games to endless numbers of people.
Thousands of games, both yes. personally and professionally. Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate to claim myself as an expert at anything, but this is one of the few things where I'm like, I think I'm an expert at teaching games.
Same. And we don't talk a lot about role play games, but we'll have Will Nation with us, our buddy Will. Yes. And he is such an expert on that. He also does it professionally as well. So he's going to be the perfect person to cut and cover everything on role-playing games, which is super hot, super big right now.
Right.
So if you ever thought about, like, I'm a tabletop gamer, I'm a board gamer, and I really want to be able to be a GM or get into a game, how do I kind of go about it? How can I play into it? This is a really good opportunity. And as you mentioned, Anthony, the Sunday panel, all about accessibility. The other area, obviously, is getting people to your table. There is a mm-hmm. lot of tabletop gamers who want to join you, want to play the games. You don't have to suffer with a low player count. You can get all of the people to the table if you take the opportunity to listen to all these brilliant panel people from all of these different organizations about how they make games accessible to everyone. Mm-hmm. And it's that kind of accessibility that leads to more gamers, leads to more games, and leads to a really great industry where everyone's included and has a wonderful time. Because I know all of us are challenged at the table one way or the other, and these organizations, that's all they do. And I'm really happy to be hosting that panel with all our friends, and we're going to learn a lot together, and it's going to be great.
Yeah, yeah, I'm excited for it.
Excellent. So we got some great stuff coming up at PAX. We got a great podcast episode with our listeners' top 100. And obviously, we're wrapping up our top 100 ourselves. So I guess this is the time, Anthony. We're going to do it. Ready? What's your number 30?
I'm not ready.
Oh, man.
All right. Let's come back next week. That's
all right. Good game, everybody. GG. It's a very short episode this week.
Yeah. I love how, like, the last five episodes, it's been a lot of, like, mental craft on, like, how to troll the audience. Like,
oh, wow.
What if we just ended at 500? What if we just ended after 12 minutes? What if we just...
Look, to be fair, we're very tired.
Yeah.
It's not trolling. It's out of just utter exhaustion, which is also not necessarily a bad thing. It's just what happens in life. Just a small little shout out here, because we really do appreciate everyone going on YouTube to add a subscription there. I know that 10 to 12,000 of you are listening right now at this moment, more or less. And YouTube may not be your obviously place where you listen to all of this kind of stuff that happens out there in the world. But it means a lot to us, because tabletop gaming, as far as receiving review copies, as far as getting games so we can talk about on the podcast, so we can teach them at the table and all that kind of fun stuff. Typically, unfortunately, because of the industry and the business that we're in, is based on clicks, is based on subscribes, is based on likes, is 100% based on reviews on all the podcast channels, is based on the number of people on Patreon. Again, it's the other side of the business that most people don't know or interested in. And again, we don't want to belabor this. We haven't, but we really do appreciate it. One of our friends out there, Business Times 83, thank you so much for subscribing, and a little shout out. Appreciate it. And again, this lets us do a lot more stuff out there, including top 100s of all time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All so right. Please, thank you. And also please and thank you.
Yes. Thank you for all your support everywhere. Thank you for sharing the podcast. Thank you for sharing the YouTube channel. Thank you for sharing and going on patreon.com/BGA. Mm-hmm. And the two great websites Anthony kind of manages and produces. So thank you. Thank you so very much. And with that said, Anthony, are you ready now?
I'm super ready. I was ready the whole time. I was messing with
you. Oh, you got me.
I did.
I didn't think you were ready.
Yeah. I'm always ready. All right, number 30. Let's dive in. Number 30 for me is a game that came out in 2017, designed by Michael Kiesling and Andreas Schmidt. It was nominated for the 2018 Kennerspiel des Jahres. This is Heaven and Ale. Mm-hmm. It is a game about harvesting the different ingredients you need to brew beer and then brewing the beer. It's a beer game.
It's a beer game.
It's crazy. It's one of my favorite board game covers, because it is like it's done in the style of the, you know, like the mosaic type of windows that you might see in like a cathedral or a monastery. And the game itself is relatively simple. And yet at the same time, very crunchy because it's difficult to do it well. So you go around this rondelle style track and you purchase these different tiles. And when you take the tiles, they are either ingredients with a number on them, or they are a monk with a face on them. And then you are going to pay the cost based on which side of your personal board you put them on, either the dark side or the light side. If they're on the dark side, that's income for later. It's money that you can produce. If it's on the light side, it moves you up the track. And the track is how you're going to score points. So throughout the game, you are trying to balance out moving all of your ingredients up that track as far as you can push them, while at the same time putting the right tiles onto the dark side to generate revenue and income so that you can continue to buy tiles. It's a game of efficiency and management and making sure you don't run out of money when you need it most, which is the type of game I love the most. Like, if you make it as tight as possible, I'm gonna dig it. So I like the theme of it. It's very cute and it's clever. The aesthetic of it is very fun. It's a very tight game. I've played this with people who got very angry at it because it's the type of game like you can get 2/3 of the way through and realize I put all my tiles on the dark side of the map. The game is almost over. I have no points.
Yep.
Yeah. Like you can play this game and score very close to zero. Yeah. So the most recent time I played, someone scored 8 points and they were not happy about that. And it's, what are you going to do? Like, I'm like, I don't know what to tell you, man. I told you how to score points, but you really just have to play it once or twice to see how it goes.
Yeah.
So it's really quite good. But it's also very tight and there are ways to mess yourself up along the way. So, Heaven and Ale, a great like 90-minute Euro game, a lot of depth, despite the like flatness of the rules. There is an expansion for this game that I absolutely do not think is necessary. It's good, it's fine, but it's like a pick up and deliver mechanism where you're like delivering the beer to various locations on a sideboard. You don't need it at all. It's out of print, so you can't get it, but even if you wanted to get it, I don't think you need it. So it's fine. I usually play without it. Heaven and Ale though, fantastic. Obviously one of my favorite games of all time, number 30. Highly recommended.
It's a great game. When I think, if we weren't talking about this and you said, what is the tightest Euro game out there? It's this.
It's like, for me, it's this and Lorenzo are way up there. Like,
oh no, this is tight. And it's like you said, mean, like,
yeah,
it's brutal. Like with the scoring. And again, I appreciate that because again, that's what you want when you want to have one of these kind of Euros where you're on a knife's edge the entire time.
Yeah. Well, it's the thing, too. It's like there are Activision discs on the board. Mm-hmm. There's only 6 every round. If you don't get to them, you're not moving up any tracks and you're not generating any revenue. So sometimes you have to skip over a bunch of stuff you need just to grab one of those tokens, and then you're not getting any stuff either. Like, it's every decision is agonizing, which if you're hearing that and you're like, that sounds terrible, like, well, this is not a game for you. But I like games when decisions are agonizing, and this is one of the most. So
100%. Again, the sharpness to it, the, like you said, the tightness, the agony of it is the beauty of it.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I have a wonderful, outstanding Euro for you, Anthony. And I think it's quite the opposite in some respects. This is Barcelona.
Yeah.
Came out in 2023. And this is from Danny Garcia. I have enjoyed this game so much. And one of the reasons why I've enjoyed this game so much is because it's a beautiful Euro. And I mean that. Board and Dice did a wonderful, beautiful job. We've talked about this before. They really listened to all of their gamers and fans out there that they really need to up their game as far as design and production is concerned. Done. Thematic kind of integration. Talking about the actual designer himself, city planner, putting all this together and thematically weaving it through the actual Eurogame mechanics. Excellent. And again, not a criticism to heaven and hell, but this is kind of the opposite. It's not a felled kind of point salad situation, but it's so involving and interesting that you have these different class of people that are going out to Barcelona to gain housing and become part of this larger community. And based on where you place them, they're going to activate spots on the board that are going to allow you to do a number of different actions, including building up the city because certain populations need certain buildings, and cathedrals are built into it, and there's public transportation that's built into it, and there's a lot of different scoring options. It starts with a very blank but beautiful board, and by the end of the game, you've built a metropolis in a very fun, light, spirited way, but every action you're taking is doing something great and dramatic. So it's a really beautiful, nice little balance there.
Yeah, I have this game at number 68. I love it. It really just jumped up. And this was like the game, like the sub game last year for Board and Dice. They just kind of threw it out there, and like, I'm sure they were proud of it, but it wasn't like the big one they were pushing. Sure. And it's really, really good. It's just a fantastic experience. And it was like my introduction to this designer. I'm like, wow, this person is going places. So exciting.
Yeah. And the expansion is, I think, came out at Essen.
I know. I want it. I want it so much. I'll get it at PAX, but I want it now.
It's true.
All right. Number 29 for me. And we mentioned Board and Dice's 2023 releases.
Yes.
Barcelona being first. The other one that came out slightly later is Nucleum.
Mm.
And that is my number 29 game. This is Simone Luciani, David Turchi.
Heard of him.
So a couple well-known designers for all of you out there. And it is a game that is just on the cusp of having too much stuff. It's like right up to the line, like a little bit more, and I think this game would have dropped like 50 spots on my list, but they just perfectly balanced how much stuff they throw in here without making it too much. They have a little bit of Brass mechanics, but I would not at all compare this to Brass. It's a very different type of game. You have an asymmetrical player board on the side, which is where you're going to place your like upgrade tiles as you go through the game. And you have these different energy producing locations on the map, the power plants, and then you have energy that you will then hopefully mine out to power the power plants to produce the materials that are needed to launch these different locations that you're placing out. So it's a little bit of route building. It's a little bit of tile placement. It's a lot of bit of like management of resources and contract completion. There's a lot of stuff going on here. On your personal player board, you have like three different tracks to control different types of income. You have the turbines you've placed out, the mines you've placed out. Every time you place something out, there's a benefit to you. You have the three different types of buildings that you've put out. Again, every time you put them out, there's a benefit to you. When you power those buildings, there's a benefit to you. The core of the game, though, is how the action selection goes. You have these little tiles, and they have two different actions on them. And you can either put them at the top of your player board, and then you take those two actions if they're available to you, or you flip the tile over and you place it on the board as a route between two locations. And then again, if you're able to complete those two actions, great. So there's so much stuff going on here, combined with the whole contract completion. It's like a whole bunch of different Euro games mashed together, which honestly, I don't typically like, because it often feels a little flat and disingenuous. But Nucleum, for whatever reason, manages to make it work. We've talked about it at length last year. I think we did two separate reviews for this game. I reviewed the expansion when it came out earlier this year, which was just a map pack. And the more I play it, the more I really enjoy this experience. And I'm really looking forward to the new expansion, even though I don't think I'm going to like it as much. It's just more content for this system. So there you go. Nucleum, 29 for me.
I think you made a really good point. This game is absolutely positively, how much could we put in before it kind of boils over?
Yeah.
And it does remind me of like movie theater popcorn, where it's like, that is a lot of popcorn and really highly stacked and seems unsafe. And you can just barely handle it. And playing Nucleum is very much like that.
Right. Yeah. It reminds me of Botoku, a game we played like 3 years ago, where it was just like, oh, this is so much stuff and these different things, and it's all a lot. And it was over that line.
Yes.
Too much. And I didn't really want to go back to that game. This one is just under that line where I do want to keep going back to it. I don't know how to define that line after 11 years of doing this podcast. I don't think I could still define that line, but there is a line there, and they have found it, and they managed to stay just under it. So good on them.
I haven't got enough plays of this. This is not my top 100, but if and when I do get more plays, it probably will. It's quite a good game.
Very good. Yep.
All right. For me, my number 29 game is kind of weird to say this. It's a classic. Way back in 2009. Small World. It's a Days of Wonder game that keeps doing great stuff. I've loved Small World since I played it. I came into the hobby playing Risk all the time and initially looking for a game that was very similar to one of the classic games I played with friends for so many years, and stumbled across at some point Small World. And one of the brilliance of Small World is when you're playing any kind of game that's troops on a map, really what you want to kind of dig into is the interesting decisions and the qualities of that particular, you know, troop base. Like, what do those troops do? Whatever, depending on whether it's a mythological faction or a military faction, like, what do they do? Like, what do they do as a group, as a team? What can they do? And based on an earlier game, Vinci, you're able to take that particular faction along with a special ability that's kind of randomly assigned, and then play them onto the board in a very deterministic style of battle. So there's no kind of like overwrought system where you're rolling 20 dice and so forth and so on. If you have enough troops, you could take over a particular spot. And then again, based on your special abilities, a whole bunch of other things happen. But once that kind of runs its course, and it can, just like with any other game, you're able to kind of put that race into decline and pull another combination to put out to the board. Sometimes it works in combination with your decline race. Sometimes picking the perfect opposition race to what's out there on the board. Maybe you pick something very defensive or offensive. Maybe you're looking for a special ability, something that benefits off of certain spots of the land. It's just a very smart, interesting, and sleek kind of game. There's complexity to it. It's one of those games that's very simple to play in a lifetime to master. But once you do, you enjoy it a great deal. There is so many expansions to this, so many different factions that come into play. I enjoy them all. Small World.
Small World's great. Yeah, it's not a game that I really got introduced to very early in my gaming career, but I feel like in the last 2 years, I've played it several times, including with you. Mm-hmm. And I've really enjoyed it quite a bit. In the multiple versions I've played as well. Like, it's not something that's like super up on my list, just probably from lack of plays, but I could see it getting there over time.
Excellent.
All right. Number 28 for me is a game that honestly, the first few times I played it, it fell off of my list, and then it found its way back on my list from playing it online during COVID. And then I repurchased it, which was a big deal because the game's actually out of print and it's hard to find. And I've played it a bunch since. And that is Nippon. This is from What's Your Game, which I'm pretty sure doesn't exist anymore as a company.
I love that company. Such a good
company. Do you? Yes. Because they stole our money.
I know.
This is the company that ran the Madeira Kickstarter, which we've talked about at length.
Revenge? Revenge? Anybody out there? Revenge?
Anybody? Yeah.
Avengers Assemble. Come on. Avengers Assemble.
Go get that warehouse. It's out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Like, I went back and forth on whether to include the game on the list, but the game is good. And it's out of print, so even if you want to go get it, you can't. So, I still like it.
We'll get Madeira one day. It's going to come.
One day. It'll happen.
Yeah.
So this is designed by Nuno Bizarro Sintiero and Paulo Soledade, which probably saying those wrong, but you all know that by now. It is a game about the Industrial Revolution in Japan, which happens a little bit later than the Industrial Revolution in the West, during the Meiji period, which was kind of the late stage. It was basically when Japan decided, hey, let's industrialize. They went out and they brought emissaries from foreign companies and all these different resources and materials in to try to industrialize as quickly as possible. And it happened very fast. And so players play as these different zaibatsu, which are the big conglomerates of companies that have all this different resources, power to kind of build this up. So it is an economic Euro game in which you are trying to build up influence and resources in these different types of production throughout the country. There are different locations in the country and on the main board, and each round you are going to be placing out different resources and trying to move up in those different areas for effectively points. There's a lot of stuff you can do to get there. So you can produce different types of goods. You can increase your ability to transport those goods with ships and trains. You can go out and try to improve your general influence overall with these different upgrades and resources and complete these different contracts. So it is a purely economic game that is very specific to the historical time period that it's representing. And the more I play it, the more I'm like, wow, this is really interesting. And one of the most interesting parts of the game is like the worker dynamic, where the workers are present in different colors kind of randomly in where you pull them. And then you're drafting those accordingly to be able to take these different actions. It's such a clever, deep game. The more you play it, the more that kind of comes out of it. And it's very slowly over the course of almost 10 years climbed its way up my list. Like, I bought this when it was new. Like, I ordered it from Italy. It was shipped to me. I'm on a pre-order from What's Your Game, like, when it was brand new. And it was just like, I don't know. And then I sold it. And then I played it a bunch during COVID. And then I bought it. And now I've played it a bunch more. And I'm like, actually, this is amazing. So I think this might even be the first time it's on my top 100. And it's way up here. So Nippon, you can play it on Board Game Arena, which is why I felt comfortable putting it on here. Because if you're interested, you can go check it out. And it's one of the better economic Euros I've ever played now at this point. And it's really solidly represents that period and that, you know, the cultural area that it's representing really well. So Nippon, 28.
Very nice. I remember playing this just often. I mean, this got a lot of table time, very sleek, very smart. And I always came away learning and understanding more about economics for some reason.
Yeah,
just like, I played this game. I feel somehow smarter in this particular area, and I don't know why.
You are now smarter.
The game that literally upgrades you.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good game.
It's very good. My number 28 is Villagers from 2019. This is from Sinister Fish Games. This is, I think, their first game that they came out, and it made a pretty big impact with my game group. Oftentimes when we play a game, we play it, we enjoy it, and then we step back and we play something else. When Villagers got to the table, we played it multiple times back to back. And that was kind of pretty surprising because typically games don't get that kind of attention right off the bat. But there was something special and unique about Villagers that everyone enjoyed. I think the simplicity of the presentation was appreciated. The box itself and all the components, the nice wood money that worked really well. How the game flowed was very understandable right from the start. And how you built up your tableau, your basically your tech tree, was really smart and brilliant. you had a number of different professions that you wanted to upgrade to, but you had to unlock them. So a number of other cards come into play. There's some good interaction between the players. You can benefit other players because they need you to unlock certain characters, or your characters benefit off what they're doing. And then there's just, at the end of the game, there's just big scoring moments that you're going to be trying to work towards. So if you're able to get to like the top of that particular trade and profession, you're scoring a lot of points. And there's a lot of different paths to victory, not just one. And it's a small, straightforward, brilliant game that just gets table time after table time right off the bat. And again, great little production. Big fan of it. Villagers.
I love Villagers. This was like number 105 for me.
Ooh.
Maybe. Like, I really wanted to include one of these games. And this would have been the one that I included. And it just barely didn't make the list.
Gotcha.
All right. Number 27. A bit of a throwback for me. Most of my games aren't this old. This is Power Grid. This is, like, I was introduced to this game in a weird way through my wife, whose friend lives in Chicago, plays board games with her husband, and she's like, mentioned that they like Power Grid. And Margaret's like, you like board games? Power Grid. I'm like, oh, Power Grid, what is that? And it was described to me as a very math heavy board game. Math. Okay. Math is fine. And the first time I saw it at game night, I was like, oh, I have to play this because I've heard good things about it. And yes, there's math. It's mostly, there's some, like, it's a lot of adding and subtract, like multiplication. It's not a ton of math compared to other Euros, but it is a very tight, interesting, highly interactive Euro game in which you are trying to maximize the efficiency of your own power grid, spread yourself out, generate enough revenue early, be able to spread out as much as you can. And ultimately, your score at the end of the game is just how many cities you can get to. That's it. How many cities can you power? And if you jump out too early, too fast, then you are at a disadvantage because now you're bidding last and you have less access to the more powerful power plants. It is an auction game. It is effectively an area control game because if you get to a location before somebody else, it makes it more expensive for them. And it is a root building game, and all those things come together perfectly. It's still Friedman Fries's masterpiece. You know, 20 years later, he's done 50 other games. This is still his best game. There are like 20 maps for this thing. There's like three versions of it, and it is just a fantastic, very fun, relatively short, 90 to 120 minutes core essential Euro game. And it's one game, like if it's at the gaming table, someone's like, we're playing Power Grid, I'm like, I will play that any night easily. So very much enjoy Power Grid.
It's an excellent game. I remember you were just evangelizing this to the ends of the earth. And as you mentioned, when people talk about this game, they're like, math. And you're just like,
yeah,
no.
Right.
It's be elsewhere.
it really does the game a disservice to describe it as a math game because it's math because you have to add up the different costs of things.
Yes.
But it's really, it's not a math game at all.
And I mean, Freedom Freeze has his own style, and the game itself has a very throwback look. It doesn't look to be a modern game, but that's its charm. It's meant to be this industrial network. And if you know anything about industrial networks, everything that's out there that's keeping, you know, the world moving is old, right? It's been built by amazing craftspeople and engineers and architects and everything out there. And they did such a good job that the stuff stays intact. So when you look at the game and when you play the game itself, you kind of imagine, or you should imagine, like, these are complex, brilliant, imaginative systems that have been going forever. And here you are coming in and trying to expand those systems. And I think like you said, there, it's kind of, people kind of avoid because of the math thing, but I think the math thing is very fun because the auction situation to this game is so dynamic, and I think that that's kind of really downplayed. I would talk up the game as far as the auction mechanic, because I think it's one of the most innovative auction mechanics and fun out of any game out there.
It's an auction game, purely. Like, the auction decides the game. If you do not get the power plants you need, because the power plants you get determine the resources you need to buy, and if everybody gets coal plants, coal gets very expensive. Like, it's that kind of thing. Like, it really is about the economy of the game, which is where the fun comes in, for sure.
It made me do learning again.
More learning!
Why?
It's like we found a pedagogical benefit to board games, but no, we couldn't do that. Not on this podcast.
Publish it, man. Quick! Before anyone finds out.
Yeah.
These games make you smart in the head and think things.
Nah, boo! Thinking's not a
word. Nerds! Them nerds! Nerds and their tabletop board games of fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about the game that's kind of a little bit of the opposite that, but it's still the coolness. It's the hipster game of hipster games. My number 27, it's Scythe from 2016. Designer, as we all know and well, Jamie Stegmeyer from Stonemeyer Games. Anthony and I can go on for a couple of hours about Scythe, and I can go on, you know, way back about predictions about Scythe. Scythe is a very interesting game. And as you mentioned with Power Grid, I'm going to kind of go with that tangent a little bit more. Scythe is a game that is often misunderstood. And that's because it is this hybrid model where you have these giant mechs and you have these military kind of factions that are fighting for land, fighting for resources, trying to get to all of the new technology that's out there and available for them. And it's brilliant, and it's colorful, and the artwork is so incredibly dynamic. And you're like, this is going to be the troops on the map game of all time. The battles, the fights, the animal companions. That's a thing, too.
Yeah.
And then you play it, and you're like, huh, yeah, that's not this game.
No, that's not at all.
No. Those things are here, and certainly they have elements where you do battle, you do fight and things, but it's not troops on the map in that kind of like hardcore format. It really is a Euro game that utilizes some of those Amerithrash elements in a very kind of light, you know, performative way. And it really comes down to maximizing the tech tree that your particular faction has. So you do want to get the mechs out there. The mechs do allow you to engage in battle, but really what the mechs are there for primarily is to help you move resources back and forth, because this is a victory point game. And in particular, gaining fame and hitting certain benefit goals, getting those encounters as quickly as possible is all the game is about. Now, I don't know if anyone else does this. Please let me know if they do. Like, I've talked to Anthony and you, all of you, very much. Rise of Fenris, the expansion. The actual gameplay of it is a story for a different day. But the components that come with the game that allows you to play a more pure Euro game or a more Amerithrashy kind of game, just a little bit more. And there's two more factions that come in the game, and there's a bunch of other elements that come with the game. Along with kind of like a prelude model that kind of speeds the game up, which is excellent. You must play that. It makes the game so much better. This is a great game, Scythe. So many people have played it. They enjoy it. The production's next level, even to this day. I still enjoy it. People mentioned it not too long ago, a couple months back, and they're like, we should play that again. I'm like, yes, we should. So it's been a while, 2016, but it still deserves a spot here. Scythe.
Yeah, like Scythe is great. It was on my list. It was top 10 for me at one point.
Wow.
Early on. Mm-hmm. It's fallen off the list over the years, but part of that is I have not played Rise of Fenris. I've not played the newer versions. And the base game, as it is I don't want to say solvable because it's an interactive game, but if everybody else treats it as a dudes on a map game, I can beat them.
Yes.
If there was a game where, like, put money down that you could win this game, I would put money down on Scythe, unless I was playing against you. But most people, yeah. I was like, yeah, I could probably beat most people, like, because it's just there are solutions to the game. It's not
sure
super well designed in the base level, and so that's like made it a little colder for me. It's just not as fun to go back to. But I really do want to play Rise of Fenris a lot.
Absolutely.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. it also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, number 26 for me is, I think, the highest one I have here for Mr. Lacerda. This is On Mars. This is the game that came out in 2020, unfortunately, early 2020, January. And so I got a whole bunch of plays in January and February, and then did not play the game for like 3 years after that. And it is still, I think, having gone back to it more recently, playing with the expansion with all the Martian invasion stuff, it's still, to me, his best game. It's one of the heaviest, it's one of the more complex, it's one of the more hardest to learn and teach, but it's so deeply thematic and yet so deeply complex at the same time. There's so much stuff going on, and it all feeds together and works well, right? His last couple of games don't do that as well. They're a little more abstract, they're a little less clear on what's happening, they're not based in like real world situations as much. And I think that's really the secret. If you want to make a game this complex, there's got to be things that players are just going to recognize and understand and be able to like process as natural things, right? Like, rhetorically speaking, you need to know that your audience understands the basic concepts naturally and then can kind of layer the rules on top of that. And On Mars does that so well. It's the best game he's made that does that. And there's a million things I could talk about here. I don't want to get into the rules of it, but the thing that really always struck me as the most interesting is this concept of like the different phases, like you're on the planet or you're off the planet, like moving back and forth between orbit and on the planet determines what actions you can take. It also determines how the game proceeds. So the game's not going to go in like a linear fashion, because it's going to depend on where you are and how you're interacting with the things that are happening. And then the board also like builds out more organically as people take actions on it. Like, it's not cooperative in any sense of the word. Like, you're trying to do your own thing, but things on the map will determine what you're able to do. And that's just the way you interact with that, the way you interact with like the orbit mechanic, the way you interact with just like developing the planet of Mars is all so clever. And then you take that expansion and you throw all the crazy stuff on top of it. Like, hey, there's Martians here now and you're being invaded. And it's like, you got to fight off the stuff. Now the game's cooperative. Have fun with that. It's the best expansion he's done by a long shot. And the game is just elevated by all that much. So On Mars by itself, I would still put up here my top 50. The expansion elevates it just that much more. It's so good.
I think it's one of the best expansions for a board game that there's ever been.
Yeah, it's so good. It's a whole game by itself, but yeah, it just layers on top of another game that also happens to be amazing.
Absolutely. I think it's hard when we talk about expansions. Like, I always talk about them like there are certain essential expansions. This is, for me, an essential expansion.
Yeah.
Because it brings such a different twist to the base game, but also at the same time just elevates the base game. Like, it doesn't lose anything.
Right.
And I think that's so, so great. Like, it just does, it does the base game a service, and then it also gives you something else on top of which.
Right.
And again, if there's any criticism for On Mars, is that it can be a little just thematically. I'm going to say it's in a thematic format. Like, it can be a little barren, right? Like the planet itself. So it's a little sterile, you know, again. But
right,
the expansion kind of solves that in a lot of different ways without going to spoilers and things.
And, you know, that's the hard thing. It's hard to talk about the expansion because it really, you kind of want to explore those different chapters on your own. And like the way it's designed, like chapter one of the expansion is one versus many. There's a one versus many mechanic for a Euro game. And then you have co-op solo. Like, how are you playing this? It's so good.
I think that's
on Mars.
Yeah, no, we should not continue to talk about this. It's just too good.
it is very good. You just final thing. It's amazing, but it's also incredibly complex.
It is.
It's a 4.7 on BoardGameGeek. I think that's accurate. I rarely agree with those. It is very, very difficult to learn the game. You're gonna have to play it 2 or 3 times. So if you're interested in a big Mars game that's very detailed, this is it. But it's a lot.
It is. All right. Looking here at my next pick. I just talked about Scythe, but let's go way back. Let's go back to 2011. Last Will. Now, when I got into tabletop gaming and then eventually got around to getting into Euro games, I understood the assignment. You build a tableau or build a machine or you build a hand of cards. And then at some point you turn that machine on and you score all the points and that's the game. And then I was introduced to Last Will. And Last Will is such a funny game. And there's so few funny tabletop games out there that are actually like actual games with a bit of crunch. Not a party game, an actual kind of fun Euro game. Because what you're doing in this game is you are building whatever it is, your tableau, your events and activities and partnerships and employees and fancy houses and fancy dinners and everything else in order to spend all of your gains. You need that kind of machine to spend everything down. It's Brewster's Millions, that movie from way back when with Richard Pryor. The idea is that you're this rich aristocrat, but your uncle is going to leave you millions if only you can show you're going to be the rightful heir here. So you are spending everything in the most hilarious ways possible. And it's a wonderful, crunchy game by Vladimir Succi. The artwork is whimsical and fun and is a really good, nice dynamic interplay with people at the table. Last Will.
It's such a clever game. And yeah, it the first like 15 minutes you play it like, for what? The first time, you're going to mess it up because you're like, oh, wait, no, I'm doing it backwards.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing it backwards. You're doing it right. I'm going to do that. And then once you start doing that, it's like, this is really fun. It's really fun to do this backwards.
That's true.
All right. Number 25 for me is, I think, my highest rated Uwe Rosenberg game. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. You never know. Twist.
I never know.
Plot twist.
We haven't gotten there yet.
Agricola. Agricola might be coming up. Number one.
Yeah, it's
number one.
It's not on my list, guys. It's not on my list.
Come on, number one.
Chris, a funny troll. It'd be a funny troll, and then everybody would know the list is not legitimate.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Hey, you turned around for trick taking. Remember trick taking was bad?
I did, but I've played Agricola like 6 times and I've never liked it. So
that's true. Gotcha.
Yeah, it's not gonna change.
Okay.
A Feast for Odin, though. The game you don't like, but I love.
Funny-shaped food! No!
Funny-shaped food is happening! So, it famously, you can go to our YouTube channel. It's like our second most watched video.
Infamously,
according to our comments. the Uwe Rosenberg tier list, this and Agricola are both bumped down to the A tier because neither one of us could agree that either game was an S tier game.
Sure.
Or a buy tier game in our case. And people don't agree with that, which I get because both of those games are probably amazing, but one of us doesn't like one and one of us doesn't like the other. So what are you going to do? A Feast for Odin is a game, though. It's a worker placement game. It's Uwe Rosenberg at his most sandboxy. You have a giant sprawling board of places you can take actions. There is a deck of cards. If you place enough workers on the more powerful actions, you draw cards. If you place even more workers on the even more powerful actions, you can play cards. And you are trying to cover up your whole map. You have your own personal map that you start with. You cover it up with these different tiles that you get. The tiles start out as like vegetables and fruits, and they turn into meat, and then those turn into cloth and pelts and stuff, and then those turn into jewels and things. These tiles like flip and they upgrade over the course of the game. And you're just trying to cover everything up. And then you can go on expeditions with ships that you purchase, built from the wood that you harvest. And then you can go pillaging and roll dice and try to capture these different resources, or to go out and, you know, to take down these different animals. There's all these different things you can do, and there's a lot of different paths to victory depending on how you do them. At the end of the day, though, I cannot argue with Chris. You are placing funny-shaped things onto a board, and you are placing that food onto your track to kind of feed your Vikings. There's a lot of different pieces going on here, and I love all of those pieces. It's polyominoes and worker placement and resource management. It's all the things that I love in board games smooshed together into this perfect little Uwe package.
Smooshed.
It's my favorite game of his. I play this one solo maybe once a month because I just feel like playing it. It's nowhere near his best solo game. I just like the mechanics of the game enough to sit down and go through it.
Mm.
It's a feast for Odin. I love it.
Somebody has to.
Yeah, well, a lot of us do, man. A lot of us do. It's top 25 on Board Game Geek, which is not our list, but, you know.
Okay.
I know. But Agricola's up there, too, and I don't like that. So
yeah,
it is, buddy. We're tied. It's fine. Nobody likes either of us right now. It's fine.
They're both fine. They're just, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's funny. It's a funny thing, guys. It's funny. It's okay we don't like each other's kids.
Uwe, only Uwe could settle this.
Oh, we should get Uwe. Which of your games is better?
That's right.
And he'll be like, patchwork. Patchwork!
It's like, ha, I got you both.
Like, all right, well, Patchwork came out of A Feast for Odin, so I guess I win. I don't know.
Sure. Do you think it would be Patchwork?
No, I don't know what his favorite game would be.
That'd be interesting. Which is Uwe Rosenberg's favorite games?
Yeah, I would love to ask him that.
Yeah. I mean, I could legitimately see it being Feast for Odin just because, like you said, it's polyominoes and it's worker placement.
Right? This is like the last, I mean, he's made other worker placement games, but this is the most sprawling of them. Like, after he made this game, things started to get smaller.
Yeah, I think that's, again, this is a discussion, we've talked about this, right? I feel like it went over the edge.
Yeah,
right.
I could see that.
Double-sided, triple-sided pieces somehow.
Yeah.
You know?
Four-sided. It's four-sided.
Well, it's Morpheus strips. Depending on how you turn it, it keeps turning on itself.
Yeah, it's so, a lot.
Yeah.
No, I always understood where you came from with this. It clicks for me, but I could see why it doesn't for some people.
Yeah, and I like his game. I like Uwe Rosen games a lot. So this is just one that went over the edge. Just like with Agricola with you, that went over the edge for you on that.
Right. Totally.
You don't like that much misery in a game. Although you do like Heaven and Ale. So
I know. I don't know why I don't like Agricola. Like, I like tight games that make it hard for me. I hate Agricola.
Show me on the meeple where that game hurt you.
I guess.
All right. My number 25. Say it together, friends. Blood Rage.
Yes.
From 2015. Eric Lang, of course, and Cool Mini or Not came together to produce one of the best troops on the map. Board games of all time. I recently just talked about, you know, when you talked about Scythe, merging the kind of Amerithrash elements of troops on the map battling each other and Eurogame mechanics. Blood Rage probably did it the best. And still to this day, it's kind of like the game that I would kind of point people to the perfect hybrid merging of both things. It is certainly troops on the map. It is certainly battling and fighting and just gripping drama as your troops get wiped out, their troops get wiped out, you wipe out your own troops, there's monsters, there's gods, everything's blowing up around you at the same time. And yet at the end of the day, you're card drafting, you're tableau building, and really the only way to win is victory points. So so that's also a thing. Like, so all my people went to Valhalla, and I won the game, even though you have all your troops still on the map? Yeah, that's how that game works. So like Anthony was saying, it's certainly another one of these games where if people don't know what they're getting into going into the game, you can walk out with 200-300-point wins.
Yeah.
And I've done that online and just been like, ooh, you people have never played this before, because you should not, you know, let me do the Loki strategy, or you should not let me pile all my people in and go to Valhalla, or any number of very straightforward strategies. And also, one of the brilliant things about Blood Rage is it's very straightforward. It's action points that you have available to spend, and then you do the actions, and the boards are very great. They explain exactly what you do. This is certainly one of those games that anyone who owns this and has played it before, you can just, you don't have to go through like a rules, like a long rules teach, or you'd have to read the rule book. You put it down, you put the player boards out. It shows you the actions there. You start the right action point spot. Things build up through the game, and that's it. Like, it's just there. It's Blood Rage. It's just Blood Rage, man.
Blood Rage is awesome. It was my number 36. I 100% agree with everything you said.
There you go.
All right. Next up for me is another Dudes on a Map game that I'm going to put higher than Blood Rage, for me personally. And that is Kemet, Blood and Sand. This is the second edition of Kemet that came out via Kickstarter back in 2021. And it basically streamlines everything that the original Kemet did, includes a lot of stuff from the different expansions, removes the things that didn't make any sense, still gave us a terrible rule book. But other than that, everything else was better. And Kemet is like, it is the ultimate, like, you gotta go fight game, right? It's not, you know, Eric Lang likes to put in those mechanics where, like, oh, you can hide in the corner, or you can go out and die on purpose, or you can do this or this or this. You don't have to fight. Kemet's like, no, you need to fight. If you don't want to fight, why are you playing this game? And I love that. And it's, that's not just it. It's not just like throw dudes out there and fight, because that's fun, but some people don't, you know, you want more than that. I want more than that. What really makes the game sing is all the different tiles that you can purchase, like the tableau that you build up of your special abilities and your special monsters you put on the board. And like the action selection mechanic with the pyramid and how you can place things on different places and you can't always take the same action multiple times. I love that. It's such a cool, clever mechanic. And everything you layer on top of that just makes it more interesting and gives you more interesting decisions to make. It's one of the rare like dudes on a map game where I'm like, if I get annihilated, I'm still happy because I'm like, well, I had a cool little tableau and I had a little scorpion dude and he killed a bunch of dudes and that was fun. Kemet, man, it's really good. I'm really excited for the expansion that's coming from Kickstarter whenever, or GameFound, I guess, whenever that comes out, because it looks like it's just going to add more cool stuff to do, which is what I want in this game.
More cool stuff.
More cool stuff.
Yeah. You mentioned you had Blood Rage before. I had Kemet before. My number 35.
We literally swapped these. Like, it's like you rotate them around. It's where they were. It's great.
100%. All right. Well, let's get out of the, you know, troops on the map in a positive way. Let's get into troops on the map in a little bit of a negative way. This is Spirit Island from 2017.
Kill the troops on a map.
Yeah, it turns out troops on the map, they're the bad guys. Yep.
Bad guys.
Bad guys are coming in. They're looking to colonize. They're looking to destroy. They're looking to take out the native Dahan that are just chilling out on their island, along with their spirits. And spirits get a little, you know, a little upset about this. So they throw down and you get the wonderful, wonderful, again, there's endless numbers of expansions for this game as well, the opportunity to play with one of these wonderful great spirits that has these spiritual powers that are thematic with the game. They play with the Dahan. They create fear. They create destruction. They move, you know, troops on the map around the board. They move the Dahan. They provide, you know, sustenance and support. Again, they do a number of really great things, very thematic to the game itself, very different as far as gameplay is concerned. Great game as far as playing a co-op game where each player has their own faction, their own deck of cards, and then you're going to play cards based upon the action points that you have available. You'll grow action points as your spirit grows in prominence on the board, and then you'll be able to play more and more powerful actions and attacks and defenses and causing fear throughout the game. Your job is to push back all the invaders that are coming onto the board alongside with your other spirits, so you're cooperating throughout. There is no quarterbacking this game. There's no pushing the other player. They get to play their hand, they get to play their spirit, and you work cooperatively together. I mentioned there's endless expansions for this, so I can't imagine the number of combinations that you could play to the table. You can also up the difficulty by bringing different invaders with different special abilities and different, scenarios into the game as well. You can play this online, very good online, you know, but in person, it's great. They even have a cheaper version in the big box stores. I'm going with the original Spirit Island for 2017.
Brilliant game. So brilliant. I'm going to talk about it real soon.
There you go.
Real soon, folks.
Now?
No, not yet. Not yet.
How about now?
Soon.
Soon? Soon.
Today.
Now?
No, my number 23 is, which is the next number, is Mage Knight Ultimate Edition. So Mage Knight is a game that originally came out back in 2011. This is the Ultimate Edition that came out in 2018. And it combines all of the different expansions for the game altogether. It doesn't really change anything with the base game. There's like 5 promo cards they threw in the box. But this is the version of the game you can buy now. And Mage Knight is, it's a weird story. It's a board game based on a HeroClix adventure game that WizKids made back in the early 2000s, designed by Vlada Shavatil, and also co-design work by Paul Grogan and Phil Pettifer, who've done a lot of the expansion work in the game. In the game, you play as one of these different Mage Knights, right? There are 7 of them, and you go on this little adventure. It's an adventure game. Like, you're going out, you're exploring, you're finding new tiles, you're unlocking different locations. But the core mechanics of the game is a deck builder. Like, you are building a deck of cards with your spells in it, and you are recruiting different people at different locations to give you different abilities. And it is a tremendous, complicated, amazing, brain-burning puzzle of a game. So much so that despite the fact the box has 1 to 5 players, which is bananas and crazy, I cannot imagine playing with that many people, I have played 95% of my games with 1 person. It is the quintessential solo Euro game, so much so that this was number 1 on the Euro or on the solo game top 100 list for many, many years before another game that we've been talking about, which I'll talk about in a second, kind of knocked it off. And the reason for that is your turn, like individual turns, might take like 10 minutes because you want to look at your cards, assess your options, look at the dice that are available. You roll dice at the beginning of every pool, and that's like the mana you can draw from, and try to min-max out the best possible turn. And like, I know in a lot of games, like Euro games, like min-maxing is not a good thing. Like, but in Mage Knight, that's the fun of it. You're like, I have these 6 cards in my hand, and he's located here, and the enemy's there, and they're going to do this, and these are the spells I could cast, and here's the extra abilities I could run, and here's the recruits that I've picked up, and here's the things I could throw out as blocking. How do I combine all this into the most efficient possible thing to not only survive this turn, but win, right? That is fun, just to build that little puzzle. And it's something that every time I pull it out, I leave it up on my table for often 2 to 3 weeks and just play through it a few different times. There are rules for competitive play, cooperative play, and then solo play. You play the solo conquest mode. And then the Lost Legion expansion has even more like building on that for the solo conquest. It's such a brilliant experience. There is a Star Trek version of this game that came out back in like 2015 or so. It's good. It does all the things that Mage Knight does, but it's a little whittled down in different areas. It's not designed by Vlada Shavatil. It's Andrew Parks kind of went through over the top of Shavatil's work and layered in Star Trek. So it's good, but it's not as good. So I've kept this one around. Yeah, Mage Knight Ultimate Edition. Awesome.
Yeah, Sally, I haven't played this. You talk about this a lot. This is one of those games where you got to be a solo guy, but you can play 2 players.
I think 2 players is fine. I would never go over 2. I've played it 2 players like 3 times, and it was always fine. It's like a 3 to 4 hour game. Like solo, it's like 1.5 to 2 hours. 2 players a little bit longer. 3 to 4 players, you're looking at a 6-hour game.
Oh,
like,
no.
It's not worth it. The downtime when you're playing with 4 people, like, I saw a group play it once at a game night, and it's like one person might sit there for 20, 30 minutes not doing anything. Like, that's not fun. No. That's not fun at all. So, keep it down to 1 or 2 players. Don't play with more than that. But it's really good at those player counts.
All right. When I pulled my top 100 list together, I made some decisions that, you know, how I would put that list together. And one of the decisions I made is if a game is like legitimately hardcore out of print, I really have to think twice, 3 times or more if I'm going to include it in my top 100, because legitimately it's not going to get to the table because nobody does have, no one has this game out there, and sometimes including myself. But there are times and cases where games are so exceptional, I think you mentioned Nippon previously, that I think they need to be on the list because I think they need to be remarked upon. And there's always a hope that these games will come back in some format, and also because these designers are amazing. So I want to talk about one of the greatest designers out there, Corey Konietzka. We don't talk about him enough, but you probably know him from, I guess, most recently Star Wars Outer Rim, but also Twilight Imperium 4, Star Wars Rebellion, Eldritch Horror, Star Wars Imperial Assault. He worked with other people on that. A lot of other amazing games, including Battlestar Galactica, the board game, which I've talked about previously, is amazing. StarCraft, the board game, is out of print, but still great. The one I want to talk about here is Rune Wars. Rune Wars is back in 2010, and it was, at that time, and still to this day in a lot of ways, the quintessential kind of magical troops on the map with their magical creatures on their sides, their different factions, the dwarves, the elves, the all the monstrous demons and such, humans just hanging out and somehow in this kind of mix. And as you run one of these particular factions, you have opportunities to bring different troops out to the board. The board's modular. It offers a lot of different special abilities and resources on each of these different hex tiles that are out on the board. You have an opportunity to bring out different factions, but also to upgrade these different factions. You also have special heroes that can go on quests on this board itself, which gives you another, you know, feel for that kind of high fantasy that's happening throughout the game. And it does come down to being a Marathrash game. You are fighting it out, but it's at the such a high level, and it's such an involved, epic game, especially from back in that day. If you got the long coffin box with the plastic mountains. I own the smaller version, the little square box. Still looking for the expansion out there. I think it's Banners of War is the expansion. Still love this game to this day. Still need to mention it. Corey Konietzka's Rune Wars.
I love Rune Wars. I had it on my list for a long time. I have not played it now legitimately in almost 11 years. So it has fallen off the list for lack of play. And I had a copy forever, and it got destroyed when my basement got wet.
Oh, no.
So I no longer own it either, but I do love it. Like, if we can get a group together, man, we will play this game. I would love to play
this
game.
Sounds good.
All right, number 22 for me. I mentioned it was coming back. It's coming back. It's Spirit Island.
Whoa, it's here.
I told you it was coming back. So this is the other game that's up there at the top of the solo gaming list, and that's because it is the most complicated, engaging, in-depth cooperative game that you can play. And that's a broad statement, and it might be wrong, but from my perspective, it's correct. It's everything you said about it is spot on. Like, the fact that they found a way to remove the alpha gaming from a cooperative experience while simultaneously introducing, like, a socially engaged approach to this type of gameplay was so fascinating. And then that system laid the foundation for having the ability to bring in, like, dozens of different spirits. I don't know how many they're up to now, like 50 or 60 different spirits that you can play as. It's amazing, and they all work, and it's such a good way to engage with this game. Like, there's nothing better than, like, pushing back the colonists and just, like, knocking those stupid little buildings off of the map. Spirit Island it's fantastic. Like, I've played it at 4, I've played it at 1, I've played it at 2. Like, it doesn't matter. All player counts are good. And it's just fulfilling in a way that almost no other cooperative game is. So 100% agree with everything you said on this one. It's why it's up here for me at number 22.
Yeah, and just to double down what you said, because I didn't mention it myself, the solo version, the solo play of this is also great because it breaks down based on the number of players that you're going to play. And in so many different games, I think, like, the biggest criticism about tabletop board gaming is, yes, you say the game plays 1 to 8 players, but the map doesn't change.
Yeah.
Because the map pieces are modular, you can, depending, you could put those pieces together for 1 player or 2 player, 3 player, just like Small World does that. And you get a great play experience each and every time.
Yep.
All right. Next up for me, my number 22 is The Prodigal's Club. I just talked about Last Will from Vladimir Succi. A couple of years later, he comes out and is like, hey, remember that whole mechanic thing I did that just kind of turned tabletop gaming upside down? Well, how about you take it to the next level a little bit? And instead of losing all your money, how about losing political favors? Lose all your votes. You can't win. Lose your friends. Lose your lose your possessions. And I'm in for this. And again, it's a brilliant streamlined design in which you start off as an aristocrat. You have everything in front of you and you want none of it. You want to leave this Victorian game behind and you just want to live a simple life. But before you could do that, you have to let everything else go and you have to push everything aside. This is a standalone game from Last Will, but you, interestingly enough, can put both of these games together to give you more and more options. Again, a brilliant design to do another deconstruction of the Euro game mechanic. A lot of fun, interactive kind of laughs as far as how are you going to lose all these elections? We talked about this before. Because a lot of politicians, they lose a lot of elections for stupid reasons. But again, we won't get into political things here. So you could do it on purpose instead of by accident. Or at least it seems like by accident. I don't know. We'll see what happens. So join me, if you would, and play the Prodigal's Club. Because it's better than watching the election coverage. I'm just saying.
It's 100,000 times better. Yes, please. Oof.
Exactly.
I've only been able to play this game once, and I really, really enjoyed it. We played it Origins. We were taught by Paul Grogan. It was a great experience.
I know that guy. He's a thing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really wanted to get this back to the table, and I just never had a chance. But I definitely see why it's up here for you. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Number 21, last one on my list for this week, is my highest rated civilization building game, Nations. This is from Lotta Pellet and designed by Rushton Hawkinson, Nina Hawkinson, Einer Rosen, and Robert Rosen. So, big old crew designed this game. And when it came out, I think the thing people knew it most for was that it was overpriced. This was, when it came out, it was $90, which at the time, in 2013, was obscene for a board game. People were like, $90? That's nuts! And now it's whatever. that's nothing.
It really is.
But the thing about this game, because it is a civ-building game, like, you are building up different civilizations, you're building up over different rounds, there's wars, there's leaders, there's culture elements, like, it's all the stuff you know and love from a Civ game. But what it does really well, from my perspective, is that it boils everything down into a just digestible format. So at any given time, depending on which civilization you're playing as, because they all have their own unique boards, you might only have slots for 5 or 6 different cards that you can play that are like rotating through. So the board in front of you will have, like, you typically 1 leader slot and between 2 and 5 wonder slots, and then maybe 3 cultural slots, event slots, and then like 5 additional slots for like the buildings and armies and stuff that you're going to build up throughout the course of the game. And so you're constantly covering those up and replacing them and moving them in and out and just trying to manage and min-max out your personal civilization based on what you have. It's not additive. It's restrictive. And I know for some people that isn't as fun as like having this big sprawling broad map that you're building on. There is no map in this game. There's like a little board in the middle and then your own personal player board. There are hundreds of cards though. So like the replayability is very high and the war component is not really as interesting or as engaging as some people would like. There are event cards, there are things like famines, there are earthquakes, there's bad things happen, but at the end of the day, it's a very Euro-ized version of a Civ builder, but it has all the different pieces of that. And it has so many different cards, and they come out over different rounds. I think there's 4 of them. So you're not just like digging through this giant deck of things and having like Abraham Lincoln against Cleopatra. You have like different eras and levels that are kind of built over time, similar to Through the Ages. Through the Ages is like almost a more accurate interpretation of like a Civ builder, like on par with like a SimCity or like a Civilization. But Nations for me was a more fun game and one that I've come back to more often because of how tight and restrictive that personal player board is and how much stuff you have to work with. The Dynasties expansion adds to that. It gives you like 10 or 15 more civilizations to work with, so like 30 total. And then it adds like a Dynasties mechanism, which gives an option to kind of double down on certain elements, but also take certain negative components as well, based on what you decide to build with. I absolutely love this game. It always comes back to my table. I spent a stupid amount of money on it early. It's now a little bit more affordable and just generally more affordable because of inflation. Like the price didn't actually go up. So you can find copies for $60 or $70, which I think is 100% worth it. And don't get the dice game. Not very good. But the original card-based Nations, to me, one of the best Civilization games out there. And it's my 21.
Yeah, an often forgot Civ game.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's like people talk about Civ games, they're like, oh, there's Through the Ages, and there's Clash of Cultures, and there's Civilization. And I'm like, yes, but also Nations. They're like, eh, Nations. I'm like, no, Nations. Get Nations. Man. It's the best one. And they're like, how is it the best one? I'm like, well, let me tell you. And I just did. So
there you go. Yeah, it's a great tableau builder.
Yeah.
It's just really just a nice job. And again, a lot of the other, I think it has a very nice balance between the weight of the game, the complexity of the game, the crunch, mm-hmm. alongside with just finally a nice, easy Civ game that you can actually play without having to like break the last blood vessel in your head at the same time.
Yeah, it's like a weirdly long game, I will say. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as it's not that complex, it's like a 3.5 on Board Game Geek, and I think that's right. It can still take 3 hours. It is relatively long. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of rounds. But it's not, you don't have to keep track of like all the stuff. Like we played Mosaic last year and it was just like, and that was a light Civ game, but it was still like, here's 4,000 things to keep track of.
Yeah.
Nations is like, let's boil it all down. Let's just boil it down to like basics. Here's what's in front of you. There's no map. It's not really a 4X. Don't worry about that part. It's just like you're building a Civ. Is it efficient compared to your opponents? Yes or no. And that's what the game is. And I love that.
Excellent. Well, looking at my last game here, my number 21 sounds like a phone number. It's not a phone number. It's actually a board game. I have to keep saying that to myself. 878 Vikings, Invasions of Europe. Invasions of England, sorry. Invasions of England, which is also part of Europe, but kind of. But no, it's England. Invasions of England. This is one of the most brilliant, if not the most brilliant games ever delivered from Academy Games. I think I have one higher, but we'll talk about that eventually. That's coming. This is all about the Vikings invading English nobles who are trying to withstand the invasion. And as players, you get to play either as the Vikings or as these English noble houses that are trying to come together to fight back the invasion that's happening. So you have the historic element that are happening here in the year of 878. And you have the 75-year invasion of England. And you're utilizing really interesting dynamic card play that you've seen in other games before from them. But the action cards that you play allow you to build up your troops, build up your different cities, build up your defenses or your attacks. And also, from the Viking standpoint, where and when are you going to attack? From what areas are you going to? How are you going to mobilize your troops? What I really like about this is it really does a great job combining the historical elements of a historical military game, and it's very accessible for the layman, right? I'm not a war gamer. This is not necessarily a game like a war game. It's very much this is more historically complex than, say, a Memoir 44, but it has so many brilliant military actions that go on that are just put into your hands with the cards, whether you take a standard deck or you draft these cards to build your own particular military strategy. It's typically a 1v1 game, but you can play with multiple players at the table. So if you decide you want to play two to four players, you could do that as well. have always been impressed by this game for so many ways. 878 Vikings. Invasions of England.
I love this game. It did not quite make my list because I had so many other two-player games, but this is like just close, like 106, because I keep saying like 101, but it's not 101, it's 106.
You're building your top 100 to 200.
I know, yeah. Like we keep going through this. I'm like, oh, that would make the list, but not quite.
That's close.
I do love this game. I haven't played it very much in the last few years, but I have a lot of two-player only games that are long, and this is just not one that breaks through very often.
All right. Well, the Vikings are going to break through, man. You're going to play this game. Just saying.
All right. Bring it.
I will. I'll bring it with me. There you go. And well, there you go, everyone. There we are. The top 100 games of all times, number 30 to number 21. Hopefully you enjoyed this list. Next week, of course, no big surprise. Top 100 games of all times, number 20 to number 11. We're getting down to the last two episodes. Again, thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully you had a wonderful time. Until next time, this is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.